am Brandy.
And I am Raven.
And this is the Sister Files.
Whoop, whoop. Favorite day of the month.
Wait. Favorite day of the month. It's spooky season. Favorite month of the year. It's okay. We just, you know, we're okay.
We're normal. It's fine.
No, we're not. But that's what makes us great.
That's what makes us special.
Exactly. All right. So today we are going to look into the Sendecker family haunting. So in 1889, the Sendecker family moved from New York to Southington, Connecticut.
1889 or
1989? 1989? Did I say 1889? Yeah. Oh. In 1989, sorry. Only like 30 years ago. Not 130 years ago. Thanks, Rafe. Okay. They moved from New York to Southington, Connecticut to be closer to the hospital that the oldest son, Philip, was going to receive cancer treatments for Hodgkin's lymphoma. Yeah, it's a hard word.
No, it wasn't the way you said it. It's just like, sometimes when you say things and they don't come out right, your face just looks so shocked.
I know. What's happening? Yeah. All right. So, there was six people in the family. The dad was Al. The mom was Carmen. There's three sons, Philip, Bradley, and AJ, and the daughter was, and they had a daughter named Jenny.
Jenny.
So when they were, originally, Carmen was originally looking for a place to live. She had a hard time trying to find a place to rent because they had four kids.
Yeah.
Then she finally did come across this, place that the landlord was willing to rent to her, and the house was set up like a duplex, and the Sendeckers lived on the bottom half of the house, which included the basement.
Okay.
And that's basically what opened it up to have enough room.
Yeah.
Because they ended up taking the basement and converting that into the rooms for the older two boys, Philip and Bradley. The basement did have to be somewhat renovated or rearranged and cleaned up so that the boys could live in the basement and have their rooms. Once they were down there starting to move things around, they figured out that the house was originally a funeral home.
Ew, I love how I make facial expressions like they can see me. Like, yeah. I'm like, oh. Right?
Yeah. So, Carmen said that they did not know prior to renting the house that it was a funeral home.
Don't they have to tell you that kind of stuff?
I don't know. Not necessarily. So there was a sign, or there is a sign that's attached to the house that labels it a funeral home. There's been conflicting reports back and forth between the people that live there and even the neighbors and stuff on whether or not that sign was covered up when the Sendeckers moved in.
Oh, okay.
And what they found in the basement that made it so that they could tell that it was a funeral home were things like a medical gurney, blood drain, toe tags, a hoisting apparatus for coffins. Supposedly the basement is where they would do the embalming, and then they would lift the coffins up to the first floor for the funeral.
I don't know. I feel like a horror movie. Yeah. Hoisting apparatus.
Right? From the first night they moved in, Philip, the oldest child, the one going through all the cancer treatments.
He wanted to say casket.
Yeah.
And cancer at the same time.
Philip began seeing spirits and hearing voices. He even told his mom that the house was evil.
Wow.
From like day one. Supposedly one of the first ghosts that Philip saw was a young man with long black hair down to his hips. And he also saw a man in a pinstripe suit with white hair that stared at him while he slept, and he also saw shadow figures, too.
So it was me and Beetlejuice.
Yes. And then your minions of shadow creatures?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Minions. Your minions.
My minions.
Supposedly another ghost that was seen in the basement was that of a young boy in Superman pajamas, like, running around.
Aww.
And supposedly this ghost was not only just seen by Philip, but was seen by Bradley. Yeah, I know. Isn't that sad?
Sad.
Children ghosts always make me sad.
Yeah. But it's the pajamas that just make it extra sad.
Yeah. Like that he died in his pajamas.
Yeah.
Or was buried in them, one or the other. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then one day, while Carmen was mopping the floor, the water she was using turned blood red.
That's normal. I mean, yeah. It happens to me all the time.
Yeah. And smelled of decaying flesh. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I never mop because I'm lazy. But, yeah. You know, at Edinburgh, exactly. I mop. That's what happens.
I know. You know, that's the new scent, you know? Who cares about pine-scented floor cleaner?
Decay.
Decaying flesh.
It's decaying flesh.
Yes.
Decaying fleesh.
Fleesh.
Yeah. The fresh scent of decay.
It's all our goals in life, right?
It's our goal in death. Ooh. Because it's decaying. So are you going to mop the floor with my remnants?
Absolutely.
You're going to mop the floor with me?
With your head, yes. I'm going to chop your head off when you're dead. I'm going to embalm and, you know, putrefy, or whatever, I don't know if putrefy, I don't think I want to putrefy your head, but I'm going to embalm your head to make it so into a mop, and all your long hair,
yeah,
and then that's what I'm going to use to mop the floor, with
that's
your head.
That's completely normal.
Yeah,
I'm
exactly.
Sure Rob won't find that weird, he walks in one morning and he's just, like, mopping
with
my head.
I can talk to you while I'm mopping with the floor.
Because I'll still be alive, I'll just be like, oh, no,
in
I'll
my head.
Oh, in your head?
Yeah, because, you know, I'll probably be insane by then, you know.
I'll be
it's
talking to you.
Insane.
I'll be like, still gonna marry Chris Evans,
even though I'm dead. I know. I feel like, oh, Chris Evans. I'll just have to get his mop of his head, too, and then you guys can live each other together. You live together forever with each other.
But he doesn't have enough hair. He'd have to be like a sponge.
Yeah.
We're special.
He'll be my broom. Because brooms have smaller
hairs, little things.
Yes. Yeah, be my broom, and you'll be my mop.
Oh my god.
You guys will live together happily ever after, as my mop
in
and broom.
In your closet?
Yep.
What are you going to live in your closet?
Okay, you'll be together. Forever.
What are you going to do with our bodies?
I don't know. I haven't gotten that far yet. Maybe I'll use your bones to make the handle.
Ew. I know. Just have our little bodies there. But our arms folded, so we're still, like, a stick.
Well, no, I was just going to break your body apart. Like, your spine. Oh. I'll just use your spine and then connect.
You know, I'm not going to lie. This sounds like a really cool looking mop.
I know.
It does on the side.
Yeah. Whew.
And that's the story.
Exactly, right? So, even after experiencing this red-colored water and decaying flesh, smelling colored water, Carmen didn't really, really think anything was going on in the house. Still continued to kind of ignore it.
I feel like I wouldn't at that point. I think I'd be like,
She was still kind of like telling Philip, you know, to stop filling the kids' heads with, you know, all these fantasies and getting them scared and stuff like that. So, Philip did, you know, like I said, continue to see the things. And then, you know, of course, the other kids started to see things, too. And Corman was just like, see, Philip, you know, you're just kind of, like, starting shit kind of thing.
Yeah.
So.
Stirring the pot.
Yeah, exactly. And as I said, the downstairs and basement was shared. Philip and Brad shared this downstairs basement. And one night, they both saw four figures standing in the corner near one of Brad's toys, which was a robot. And the toy was going crazy. Then the four figures turned and looked all at once at the boys. Brad and Philip were both terrified. They sprinted up the stairs to Carmen, who headed downstairs immediately to investigate. And of course, the boys were right beside her, still scared to death, but nothing was there. She went through the entire basement, even the unused parts, to see if anybody was there, but they found nothing. When Carmen went back upstairs to the kitchen, she discovered that one of the crucifixes over the door was gone, which had been happening, because that was actually, I believe, the second one that went missing, because there was a lot of crucifixes over the hanging, and after that specific incident, she noticed it was gone. Mm. And so that's when she called a family meeting with, like, Philip, you know, in front of the siblings, was like, stop scaring your younger brothers and sisters, this is getting ridiculous, you know, we've all got to live together here, and I don't need a bunch of scared kids all the time.
Yeah.
Then, along with seeing, I know, it gets worse for Philip, because along with seeing all the ghosts and stuff, he also, his personality seemed to change the longer they were in the house. He became distant, dark, and violent. He would constantly fight with his brother Brad. And then at one point, Carmen's nieces even came to stay with the family for a while, and Philip tried to attack one of her nieces. Supposedly, the story is that she was trying to break up the fight between him and Philip, and or Philip and Bradley, and Philip went after her instead. So, this is like, at this point, when the fighting became bad and his personality was changing, is when Carmen was like, okay, maybe we need to look to see if he gets Philip some help.
Yeah.
So she consulted the doctors, and the doctors were like, well, it's got nothing to do with his chemo. So then they recommended him to be seen a psychiatrist or a therapist. Mm. And when he was seen by them, he was diagnosed with schizophrenia, and they did admit him to the mental hospital.
Aw.
When he was being taken away to be admitted to the mental hospital, before he left, he told his mother that they would come after her now. So while Philip was away being evaluated at the mental hospital, the other kids, their claims of seeing paranormal activity increased, and Carmen actually began to experience things herself.
Oh.
The kids said that they would hear footsteps, disembodied voices. Bradley even said that he saw a ghost. First, he saw the evil eyes first, he said. And then when it came into view, it looked like a sister. So he thought maybe it was just a reflection. Light made her eyes reflect weird. So he didn't think much of it. And he was just like, what are you doing down here? And then she was kind of acting strange. Didn't say anything, but just sat there and switched the, messed with the light switch. Turning it on and off. On and off. And the lights turned on and off with it. And then his sister left. He ran upstairs to tell his mom what was happening. Like, hey, why was Jenny downstairs bothering me? Yeah. And his mom was like, well, she's not. She's upstairs asleep. And he was like, But his mom, of course, was like, it's nothing. It's probably a dream. Go back to bed.
I would not be going back down there and sleeping.
Exactly. Well, what was the interesting part about it all that his mom really didn't want to take in consideration was that the light fixture that was turning on and off had no bulbs in it. So the light was coming on and off in a fixture that should not have been turning on and off.
Yeah.
Because the dad had already gone down and removed most of the lights.
See, I just kind of feel like this is when you, like, leave the house.
Yeah. So then, one of the nieces, Tammy, began having paranormal experiences herself. She said the covers of her bed would be tugged on, and then an entity would touch her as she was sleeping. Mm. And then, trigger warning, eventually the activity got so bad that it turned out to be, the entity would be molesting her while she was in bed. Yeah, that is. Then one day, when Carmen was in the shower, the shower curtain wrapped itself around Carmen's face, trying to smother her. And Carmen, as much as she tried to struggle to get it off, was not able to pull it off. Eventually, she was able to make enough noise to get Tammy to come in and help her get it off her face. A little creepy.
Yeah, that sounds terrifying. I would never get a shower there either. I would never sleep there or get a shower there.
Yeah.
So at this point, we just move out.
So then, both parents started to have experiencing paranormal activity, and it seemed to be happening mostly at night. It started off with them hearing, like, music. It was like, to them, it was like 30s music, is what they explained it as. And they couldn't explain the source for it. And this would happen at night, and it wouldn't really happen to both of them at the same time.
Yeah.
Either one would be sleeping or not there in the room at the time while the other one was awake. So it would only happen to them mainly one at a time.
Yeah.
Where one was experiencing it. And with the music, eventually they heard what was sounded like men talking in the room, but they couldn't, there wasn't any around. And then it got a little physical. The bed would start to shake on its own, even to the point where, I heard you singing, to the point that it would kind of like pulsate, like to a heartbeat. Like, it was a constant, that's like, it creepy. Wasn't just shaking, it was, like...
How do you, like, get back in your bed? How are you, like, oh, well, last night the bed was shaking. Yeah. I'm just gonna climb back in here again. Like, I know, no. Right?
Yeah. And then Carmen said that she would experience things moving on the bed when nobody was there. Like, at first it would look like it was, like, a cat walking across the bed, like the imprints of a cat. But then it would stop, and it... The impression that was, like, somebody sat down.
Ooh.
On, like, the edge of the bed.
Yeah, that's creepy.
Yeah. And they also claimed that the covers would be tugged off or pulled off of them when they were sleeping. Eventually, it did get worse for them, too. Big, big trigger warning. Both Al and Carmen claimed that the entity that was causing the bothersome activity in the room began to rape them. They both said that they were sodomized multiple times.
Ew.
And one of the times, Carmen even said that she heard evil laughter during the event.
How do you stay?
So, eventually, things continued to get worse. The entity would make itself known not just during the night. It would mimic the voices of the family members when nobody else was home. It would call out to them. And then it would eventually began to sound more demonic, cussing and yelling obscenities at them.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So to answer your question, when asked why the family didn't move, they claimed that the entities would follow them wherever they were going.
Oh.
The parents said it followed them to work and would cause unexplained activity there to them and their co-workers. And even Tammy, their niece, said that when she would go out with her friends, it would bother her friends sometimes. And so she got to the point that she didn't feel like it was safe for her to leave the house.
Oh my God.
Because she's putting other people in danger.
Yeah.
And it was pretty much at this point is when some of Carmen's co-workers... referred them to contact Ed and Lorraine Warren.
Oh, the Warrens!
The Warrens, yes. It'll be the first of many cases by the Warrens.
Yay.
We will go over. Including doing a nice episode of their life in general.
Yeah.
Because they're quite an interesting life they've had. By this time, the late 80s, the Warrens were self-proclaimed and known demonologists. And they were the ones people called to kind of like handle this stuff. So when they arrived... And they did a reading upon the house. They immediately pretty much said that the house was infested with demons.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Ugh.
They immediately launched.
This is not funny, but I just had this thought. Like, the other day I had the flea issue,
mm-hmm.
and it's done. It's resolved now because I got a flea bomb.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, could you get a demon bomb?
Yeah.
Just turn it on, and everyone comes out of the house for a little bit. You go back in, you just clean up, and you're done.
Yeah, right?
We used a demon bomb.
Yeah. So, once they decided that it was infested with demons, they launched a major media campaign. Then the Warrens and their team of investigators, that included their nephew, John Zaffis, stayed in the house with the Sendecker family for 9.5 weeks.
That's a long time.
That is a long time. During the investigation, the Warrens came to believe that the funeral home workers were guilty of necrophilia.
Ew.
Which is what led to the evil presence possessing the home.
Mm-hmm.
And then one night, John Zaffis, while he was there in the home doing work, he had an experience of his own. He said it was at, the family had all fallen asleep. They were all sleeping in the living room at this time, all together.
Oh, yeah, see, I'd be down. That would make sense.
And he was kind of working on research in another room when he felt the atmosphere change and the temperature decrease. So he tried to get up to get someone else to see if they could feel what was going on too, when he came across the main stairwell. There, he saw a spirit coming down the steps, and it said to him, "Do you know what they did to us?"
Ew.
Yeah. It freaked him out a little bit. He left for a few days and was like, I need a break.
Yeah.
I need a moment.
I need some time to reflect.
Yeah. Just give me a moment.
Some reflection time.
Okay. So eventually, the Warrens were able to obtain permission from the Roman Catholic Church to perform an exorcism. According to the Warrens, it took 3 priests to complete the exorcism.
Wow.
The first 2 priests that came were not actually able to complete the ceremony. Finally, after the 3rd priest came, it took 3 hours to perform to do the complete exorcism, and it ridded the house of the demonic possession.
Oh, it worked.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
All right. It's an interesting tidbit. From what I have seen for the major cases, the most famous cases of the Warrens, the ones that most people know about, mm-hmm. This is maybe, like, one of the only ones that actually ended in an exorcism.
Oh, wow.
When I was watching a documentary and I was kind of researching some of their other cases, almost all of them kind of ended all a little bit differently.
Hmm.
But not most of them did not actually end in exorcisms.
Huh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So, like any hauntings and cases that involve the Warrens or any cases that involve demonic possessions, there was controversy.
Yeah.
Pretty much from the start.
Yeah.
The first thing that everyone wanted to pretty much say is why it was all kind of fake was, or that it was kind of a rush to judgment to say it, that it was demonic, was that Philip was the one that brought the tension to the paranormal activity. He was kind of one that started it. And then he was, like, almost immediately diagnosed as having a mental illness that could explain some of the activity that he was seeing.
Yeah.
Which then, you know, you have, like, mass hysteria. Granted, there's not a lot, but it can happen. So they kind of thought that it was, that could have what started all. And then, like, everyone's imagination kind of spiraled out of control.
Yeah.
Not only that, Philip was supposedly using illegal drugs.
Oh, no.
And during one of his counseling sessions when he was admitted in the hospital, he even admitted to doing causing some of the activity in the home, including there was rumors that he was the one who was kind of bothering the nieces.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So there was that claim.
Yeah.
It was a claim. I don't know. It hasn't been, I haven't found anywhere that it was actually substantiated, but it was one of the claims that were saying that why it wasn't really true. It was kind of all made up.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that everyone, that brought it all into question, mm-hmm. was that the Sendeckers were not the only family living in the house during this haunting period.
Plot twist.
Right? Because I did tell you it was a duplex.
Yes, you did. Were you paying attention? Will you pass the quiz later? No one knows.
So, the family that lived in the apartment above the Sendeckers said that they experienced no paranormal activity the entire time they lived there.
Interesting. But I give you this other idea.
Okay.
This is my idea.
Okay.
The Sendeckers were the only ones who had basements.
Very true. So maybe the basement's where the activity was, and they didn't travel to the rest of the house.
Or maybe their neighbors didn't like them, so they were doing all the bad stuff.
You never know. Some people said that, including, I want to say, maybe the neighbors that lived in the duplex above, or somebody that knew the landlord or whatnot, that all the paranormal activity information came about when all of a sudden they were late on their rent.
Oh, how convenient.
Yeah, and saying that they were doing it because they wanted to get out of having to pay and get in trouble and not be in trouble for all that stuff. So, that was another reason. Then, one of the neighbors, or many of the neighbors, didn't believe them. There was actually even one neighbor that would record all the happenings on the street. Like, a truck went by, if she saw kids in the neighborhood after a certain time.
Does she not have a life? Like, what's happening
there? Yeah. And she would then take and count if the Sendeckers claimed anything happened during the night and match them up and say, oh, well, you know, they claimed their bed shook that night, but then a big tractor trailer drove by, so maybe that's what shook their bed.
No.
Yeah, or they claimed that their windows was making, you know, was rattling.
Yeah.
And there were kids outside messing with them. So she would try to say that that's what it was like. And then there was also, some people have claimed that the Roman Catholic Archdiocese, the local Roman Catholic Archdiocese in the area, said that there was actually no authorized exorcism performed during the time that the family said that they were in their house and it was cleansed.
I also find it interesting that the first thing they did was launch a media campaign.
Yeah. Supposedly, it was their way of getting attention so that the Roman Catholic Church would agree to do the exorcism,
that kind of makes
from
sense.
What I hear. Now, what I also find very interesting is that both, I have mixed views, opinions on what was going on.
Yeah.
I believe that the Warrens, so they paved the way, in my opinion, for all that's available now when it comes to ghost hunting, when it comes to, you know, all this stuff, like all the paranormal stuff. To me, they kind of opened that door.
Yeah.
For it to be accepted into the public eye, into, what's the word I'm looking for? Socially acceptable to do these things.
Yeah.
I feel like they kind of open that door for everyone. So I do believe that there, and I do believe there is some truth to it. I believe that some people actually do find actual evidence and it's not all just can't be explained away.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
This case, I'm kind of leaning more towards maybe it wasn't.
It's just a lot happening.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like, there's a lot going on in that case.
Yeah, like, because not only did they get the media attention, both the Sendecker family and the Warrens wrote a book about it. Mm-hmm. Supposedly, the person that the Warrens hired to write the book, Ed Warren, told him to write whatever he wanted. He could make stuff up if he wanted to.
Oh, Lord.
Just to make it sound good, because that's what would sell.
Yeah.
The book that came out, and I can't remember the name exactly of the book, but the book that was written by this original author for about the Sendecker family, it ended up being more of, I went to do research about, to write a book about a family that was haunted, to, I went and did, to write a book about a family that had, like, they were dysfunctional. He wrote about how dysfunctional they were, and he didn't believe the claims, and this other stuff. Yeah, crazy. Like, actually, I want to say the book's out of print now, and so it's hard to find, but supposedly he was, like, basically told them all. Another interesting thing is that they were willing to go on shows, and this is, of course, early 90s, and we all know early 90s talk shows or something to be desired.
Yeah. Huh.
And so, yeah, I guess you didn't have your much to choose from. But the episode that I watched that I got a lot of my information from was Sally Jesse Raphael. So,
that's funny.
If you are interested, you should go check it out. I mean, it's an interesting look on all of it. And it's the dynamic and the way that they talk. Like, how the family are sticking by their story, but then, like, the neighbors, the people that are trying to say that it's not true, like, they personally seemed offended.
That they were. Like, you're ruining our neighborhood.
Yeah. Like, and then, Ed and Lorraine Warren, like, Ed Warren, he came across kind of combative, too, which is very interesting. Like, yeah. Kind of like he was at the point of his life where he was just pissed off that everybody never wanted to believe him. So he was just like, you know, I don't care what you think. This is really what happened. Just deal with it. Kind of thing. So it was, it's an interesting situation to look at with that, with the Sendecker family. So whether you believe it or not, they did make a movie of it.
Ooh.
If you guys aren't aware, it's called The Haunting in Connecticut. It's an interesting case.
It's an interesting title.
I mean, an interesting, not an interesting case, an interesting movie. Of course, you know, they did fictionalize some things.
That's such a bulky title.
Yeah. So.
Very bulky. Don't.
It doesn't like fall that. Into the new recent.
The Conjuring universe.
Yeah. But it was before that. It doesn't fall in the same court. But the Warrens are in the movie, if I'm not mistaken, or portrayed in the movie, I should say. And most of the Sendecker family is still alive. Philip, unfortunately, his cancer did come back, and he did die in his 30s. But he was able to get married and have kids and have a pretty successful life until, you know, he unfortunately passed away. Which, then, interesting enough, that even became, like, a big thing on the internet. Like, people were like, oh, he committed suicide. Oh, blah, 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 blah. They wanted to go off and in fact, his cancer just came back, unfortunately. But people wanted to make a big deal about it. So. But they're interesting things. To hear the perspective from the family. Like, they're still sticking by their story. They've done recent interviews in the last 10 or so years. You know, still sticking by their story. Still having information and stuff like that. And the mom, I think she helps out a lot with a lot of paranormal stuff here and there with other people. Yeah. So. You know, they stuck by it. So, it could be real, it could not. Maybe, I don't know. Like, this one, in my opinion, has so much against it that it's kind of easier to say that it was kind of debunked.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. Let us know what you think. You know, you can reach out to us on Instagram at the Sister Files Podcast or on Facebook at the Sister Files.
Or you can email us at thesisterfiles2020@gmail.com.
Yes. And if you really do like our show, you can help us out by giving us a 5-star review or following us on whatever media platform you listen to us on, whether it's Google Podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Would really help us out a lot. But we really love to hear from you, and we want to thank you for listening. And in the meantime,
be sweet,
stand tall,
stay strange.
Bye, y'all.
Farewell.